Going live. And we're live. Ladies and gentlemen, What Embargo, episode 20. That's 20. We made it to 20, Catfish.
I can't believe we made it to 20. That's kind of amazing.
I'm impressed. So, and to honor our 20th, we're doing something completely special, and not even talking about Cuban cigars. So, to all of our Cuban followers out there, this one goes out to you. So, but today, no, we're talking about boutique company that is on the rise and their new cigar, which has got everyone screaming. The cigar is simply called HR, and the company is Cubanacan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, you got it right.
Perfect.
Good.
Nathan, why don't you break down Cubanacan for us and just kind of talk about the entire company? Because it's an interesting
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad to. Thanks for having me.
Tell us who you are, Nate. Like start the show and you don't even do shit. You're just like, hey, why don't you tell everybody? Nobody knows who Nathan is. I mean, all of us do. We're talking about, you're an asshole.
Okay.
And all these other people out there don't know who Nate is who are watching, and they need to know who Nate is. Nate, tell us, well, first off, Nate, how's your wife doing? Because I've been following that on Facebook. She's doing all right?
Thank you for starting it that way, because first of all, I want to say thanks to like the whole cigar industry for all the well-wishing and support and kind words and kind thoughts. She is doing very well.
Good.
She just got back from the doctor today, and her recovery path is very, very good. Her prognosis is excellent. The doctors, I know a lot of people have asked, so this might help get the word out. The doctors did such a great job with it, and we were pretty, frankly, we were just lucky that we caught it early. For those of you who don't know, my wife had grade 3 carcinoma, DCIS, which is a very aggressive form of breast cancer. She was diagnosed in September, and as of last week, the oncologist told her there's really no reason to come back and see her.
Wow.
They dug in, they found it, they removed 10 masses from her breast, but for whatever reason, and largely because I think there's a lot of good people out there saying a lot of good stuff, while they can't use this term, I don't believe yet, she's considered cancer-free. There's no chemo or radiation that's going to be necessary or anything like that.
That's awesome.
Good stuff. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, I've been following it, and obviously, it's hard for some of us to keep in touch on anything other than the Facebooks and Twitters of the world because we're all so busy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I'm glad to hear she's doing well because I've seen it, and I have family members who have gone through it and not survived, and I have family members going through it right now. It's not easy, so.
Yeah, well, she named the tumor Claude, and nothing French has ever advanced, so it never had a chance in the
That's awesome. So tell everybody out there who you are and what your position with Cubanacan is, and then give us the history of Cubanacan, so that people know who you are. Because Seth and I know you from House Familio before the move to Cubanacan. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and then give us the word on Cubanacan.
My role with Cubanacan is it's what the title is Eastern U.S. Director. The cool thing about what we do, you know, what that specifically entails is selling to the Southeast and serving those retailers. Also, it's going to include some management stuff with everybody that we work with east of the river. But really, the cool thing about the way our company is set up is we're kind of just an island, and we all kind of just get it done. So at any given point, Spence could be throwing some things around. I might come up with an idea. You know, it's very, very fluid. There's no rigid structure to it. We just kind of do what works and work to each other's talents. And I think it's really cool because we kind of figuratively, you know, Robert included, we all figuratively meet in a circle and throw things out there. So it's very, very collaborative, and that's what really attracted me. I mentioned it when I posted my acceptance on Facebook back in the summer. The cool thing about this company is it's very collaborative, and they just want to make good cigars, and there's no real delusions of grandeur or anything like that. Just want to make good cigars and get them in the hands of good people at a good price, and you know, and just have fun with it. And so that was what was really attractive about making that move for me. I'm really proud of what we accomplished at House of Emilio, and for me, this was another step. Being a boutique nut that I am, I just met more good people that I thought really deserved a shot at getting the word out there. CabanaCon itself has been around, I believe, since about 2006. For the first several years of its existence, they focused on small runs and things of that nature, priming the fields. We are vertically integrated, so I was really attracted by that as well. Our factory is in Esteli, just a little tiny factory with a few people that work there, and you know they'll ship some cigars out and then go play soccer. You know, it's really a true mom and pop small operation. The premium stuff started around 2012 when the Core Line CabanaCon blends came out, the Connecticut, the Maduro, then the Habano came along. Of course, Cineros is the line. Completely under Omar Aleman's control. You know, he's our master blender. He's a large part of what you know what you're smoking with the HR. We also have the Maderos line, which is under a bit of a revamping right now, which is Robert's family line. And then here comes HR. And so it's been pretty fun. There has been really, really rapid growth over the last 5-6 months. So it's been kind of a whiplash phenomenon for some of us, because I think that when lightning all struck at the right place at the right time, and you know, I knew Spencer for a long time. I knew Lawrence from before he was in the industry. These are my dudes. These are my buddies, and working with them was just natural. So that was really, really fun.
Yeah, Lawrence is a character, isn't he?
Yeah, man, he's a big teddy bear, man.
He's a character. I got introduced to him this year at the show, and he cracked me up, man. He's good people. He's good people.
You can tell I'm high class tonight. I'm really high class tonight. If you want to do a pairing, I've got a CabanaCon Maduro and a Diet Dr. Pepper. Oh, yeah. Shout out to the Southern Fried Pipe Club, by the way.
Hey, man.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, Dr. Pepper's the bomb.
It is a good pairing. A lot of people actually swear by that with cigars, and I've had it with cigars before, and it actually works really well, I must say.
Just personality-wise, I've never been really that. I mean, as my grandfather would say, I've never been really that highfalutin. You know, it's one of those deals where if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. And we can, you know, with cigars, we can talk about hints of nutmeg and bergamot. But frankly, I was just in the mood to have a Diet Dr. Pepper and a cigar. So you know what? There we go.
Yeah. I'm actually having – I've never had a CabanaCon cigar before. None of them. Nothing from the line.
Well, damn.
I'm on West Coast, so it's probably why. But somebody sent me, oddly enough, I got a Christmas package a couple days ago, and somebody sent me the – CabanaCon, it's like a limited edition Maderos.
That's old. That's not even made anymore. Yeah, that's not even made anymore. Wow, man.
Nice.
Yeah, that's from like
special now.
If my memory serves me correctly, that was from like 08. That was a trial run type thing.
So, really?
So if you like it, congratulations. If you don't, good news. We don't make it anymore.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger ring gauge than I normally like, but it's like a Connecticut, I want to say.
Yeah.
Very very smooth, mild. You know, it would be a good first of the day cigar, and I'm actually glad I grabbed it right now because I was boxing about 30 minutes ago, so I ran home to jump on, and if I would have smoked a nicotine bomb right now, I'd probably just fall over on my chair.
Yeah, well, that's
a mild cigar helps.
Well, the good news with what we do, and I think largely you're not knowing much about us, is because of your geography. We're working right now to get some of the right people on the ground out in Cali and the West Coast and all that. But as far as our blending, as far as the CabanaCon philosophy and blending, it's Omar's old school, man. Omar's this cool cat from Cuba. And when Omar blends cigars, it is all about flavor. That's the first and last thing. So when we never really Omar, in my experience, has never blended a cigar that had anything to do, any purposeful move about strength. The strength on the cigar for whatever they ended up being, but it was all about nuance. And so what that's fleshed out to be right now is most of our cigars are a good, in terms of strength, a good solid medium. We've got some milder. The Sinero Sabano Maduro is a nice, fuller strength cigar. But really, the good news, the thing that I think is, this is attributing to its success in a large part of the country, is that it is very palatable, and a lot of people can smoke it. So that's what's been really fun for me.
What about you, Seth? Do you see him over there at all?
What's up?
Do you see him over in North Carolina?
I never hook up with this dude when we're over in Carolina. I never see him. I don't think he exists.
I don't exist. I'm this little figure of magic. I know that you guys are really growing in Charlotte right now. I know, you know, Union. I know I got my HRs. Coop picked me up some HRs from Union in Charlotte. And I know that it's growing there. And I know that you guys were in, well, I don't know, are you in Greensboro? And are you in Winston-Salem or any of those areas?
We're working on that. We're working on that, some stuff there around that area for the turn of the year.
Yeah. So, but it's one of those, I've heard about it, and once again, I'm like Catfish. I never had any Cubana done. I heard about it, you know, back from when you had a previous rep and previous individual with the company. And then, obviously, I mean, I think we can all say, when you have the HR got announced, that got everybody's attention.
All right.
Let's see what's going on here. So everyone's like, hey, I want to smoke this HR. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this is the first thing you get to smoke, and holy crap. this is tasty stuff, and it's just going to, it's getting better and better. It's just been sitting in my humidor.
Wait till it gets good.
Gosh, that's already great, man. So, and I mean, and you said Omar's the one who blended this, and I know we'll go into that, but, you know, I've read in Cigar Aficionado, had a very good introduction about this in the summer, is that, you know, he used to manage La Corona in Havana, Cuba, which is a very big factory. Mm-hmm. Now, this has a triple cap. Is everything you rolled in the Cuban fashion, or?
Yeah. I mean, it's all very, very traditional.
Yeah.
Here's something that'll drive. Okay, so we're all in this conversation. We're all boutique cigar nerds. I consider ourselves, the three of you, you know, the two of you guys, I consider y'all artisan cigar people. So you'll know the big fights over what's a Lancero, you know, what's a Corona Gorda, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we make a long, thin cigar in the Maduro. It's called a Lonsdale. Why? Because it's a Lonsdale. It's a 6.5 by 42 European mil spec Lonsdale. It's, you know, it's 1911 American issued, killed the Germans. And you know, Omar in the factory practically, you know, in his mind, you know, he's ready to stab somebody if it's a millimeter off. I mean, that's the cool thing about our Robustos, what you would consider a Robusto, is a 5x50 Rothschild. Yeah. And it is called a Rothschild. All traditional sizes. Yeah, Omar is very traditional, and it's really kind of, to me, it's really kind of a breath of fresh air when everybody is doing something edgy and new and different and revolutionary, and you're never going to be the same after you smoke the next thing. I think, you know, I'm an old-fashioned guy. I really kind of appreciate some of there's a little bit of truth in doing things the old-fashioned way, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to make a Lonsdale, make a Lonsdale, and I'm with you on that.
And a Lonsdale has been my favorite size for, like, my entire life, and finally somebody comes out.
Yeah, and someone actually finally makes a true Lonsdale. No, you're absolutely correct, because, you know, nowadays, you know, years ago, back in 2007, 2008, you said you're going to get a Robusto, it's probably going to be a 5x50.
Right.
Now you get a Robusto, and it's like 6x54, that's what they call a Robusto. I'm like, that's not a Robusto. Yeah. That,
it that's could a be a 5x54. It could be anything.
Yeah. And, I mean, and, you know, the best fun I've seen about it is, you know, when Robert Caldwell did his Long Live the King, his Toro, which is, he calls a petite double wide short Churchill, in which he called it that.
See, I love that, though. I do. Yeah, I love that.
It's one of those, it's the greatest titles ever. Like, you should have just called it Toro, but he did it on purpose.
Yeah, that's fun to me. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. You know, it's totally up to the philosophy of the people that are making the cigars. I just really happen to like this one.
Yeah. Catfish, there's an ATF on
you. What?
Is that your airplane?
Yeah, no, they've been spotting me all day. I was cutting down some fig trees earlier, and they were spying on my ass. So. Very good. They're coming for me. They knew we had a show tonight. So,
Catfish's always got the planes coming after him. So
yeah, the ATF.
What's the production numbers? I mean, because you know, you said Omar is very traditional. It's a very small factory. You probably have an idea of how much you're producing of everything, you know, annually from that factory, right?
Yeah. So take the smallest number that you would ever imagine a legitimate cigar company making and cut it in half, and that's close. Honestly, I don't have exact numbers of production in terms of overall across the company, but I do know that it is extremely craft. The cool thing about it is, you know, from a retailer perspective. In the case when there's a back order on a certain size, like for instance, our Rothschilds and our Gordos do very, very well. In the event that there is a back order with us, it typically only lasts about a week because having your own factory, we ship out almost every week and we get something replenished.
Yeah.
The rollers are busy these days down at Cabanacon.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I'm not even going to try and guesstimate it a number because I don't know anything that would be fairly close, but I can tell you that it's very, very small compared to a lot of the manufacturers out there.
Yeah. I know some of them just produce out tons. So, Catfish, do you have another one, or do you want to? We want to roll from
what?
There. We want to focus
questions?
On
questions.
Yeah, you had some questions.
I have a million questions. I'm sorry. I had to cut my Facebook off because somebody was messaging me, and okay. I'm in the middle of talking smack to Rob and Logan. Well, Logan mainly because they have cigar chat going on right now. So I'm telling everybody in the chat room to turn them off and listen to us instead.
I told them that there was cigar chat. I sent out an email to the entire cigar community saying, "Listen, you can watch Rob and Logan, who are a bunch of losers, or you can tune into." Catfish and I. So
I'm gonna. Did you send him the questions that I had?
Nate,
did you get any questions from us? Okay. So yeah. I'll start going down the line then. And I know you weren't with Cubanacon at the IPCPR show, but what was the? You know, speaking of the HR now, I guess kind of shifting directions into the HR, which I think is kind of an odd timing that it came out, and then all of a sudden we have this. You know, Obama making a step forward with relations in Cuba. It's just very interesting kind of how these things are taking place because there's a lot of, there could be, who knows what will happen in the future, but how was the overall response at the IPCPR show for, that you've heard for the HR? Because it seemed to us that he was, you know, everybody wanted to be there, I guess, but you never know, you know, how many people are actually going to pick up the cigar and pick up the line. It's an expensive line, and if they hadn't ever done business with Cubanacon before, you know, what was the response like at the show?
Well, let me put it to you this way. At the trade show, we sold over 50% of our initial production run at the trade show. It was overwhelming. Those guys over there did a great job. You know, they were within eyeshot of where I was on the show floor, and, you know, if you ever go over that way, they were busy the entire time.
And, yeah. Oh, no, I know they were.
Yeah. And the response was very, very good. You know, I would say, I'm just going to narrow a percentage. I would say about 65% of the initial production run was pre-sold at the trade show. And then that doesn't include what's been selling since.
So been good. Did you guys have more ready to hit the market now that you guys released in December, or was that initial run that you prepared for at the show what you were marketing in December now?
I think I'm about to answer your question. If I miss it, then just slap me around. What we are shipping now is what we pre-sold at the trade show.
Okay.
And now we are taking orders for it as well with new accounts that want to bring it in certain quantities. As my TV gives me a nice blue glow, I look like a disco ball. we are shipping out new orders as well, but they were, you know, our office, they were a little stressed out the first week of December.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet they were.
Yeah, that's why I waited to do anything with the Lawrence gave me some samples at the show, and I know some people who got them at the show, they immediately went out and reviewed them, and I waited until the last week of November to review it. Mm-hmm. As much as I wanted to smoke them, he gave me two to review, the Sublime and the Pellicoso or Pyramid. I don't know what it was, but it was a torpedo shape. And
The Pellicoso.
Anyways, I waited. I wanted to wait until I knew when you guys were actually facilitating the release.
Right.
And they were fantastic. I thought the Sublime was unbelievable, but that's another story. But that being said, are you guys opening up? Are you guys limiting the number of shops that you're opening these up to?
We foresee a time coming when we're going to have to limit the number of accounts that carry HR just due to the demand.
Yeah, because I'm assuming that if it's small production, you can't just open up everybody and pull, Kiribati, where you have a billion orders and you can't,
Well,
for years.
Our number one concern is being able to service the customers that we have. And to their credit, this fall, a lot of retailers have signed on board with Bonicon and HR. To the point right now where we're okay. But I, talking with our team, we foresee a time coming when we will have to cut that off. Mm-hmm. When is that? I don't know. What's the number? I have no idea. But when we get that gut intuition that, all right, we've hit mass on how many accounts that can handle HR, then we'll keep it with those guys and we'll be happy with that. It's not a limited edition, but we have to, with our infrastructure, we have to be very careful because our number one concern is being able to super serve the customers that we have without sacrificing that relationship to go out and get new.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Seth.
No, I was just going to say it's a good business model. I mean, it's one of those, you want to open accounts, but you're not making them limited, but at the same time, you're not sacrificing any level of quality, whether it's from the service, from management, from the guys in the field, to the tobacco, to the rollers, anything. There's nothing being sacrificed in terms of quality.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's just be honest. There are a lot of really good boutique cigar companies out there. There really are. The number one way to kill your brand is to start pushing out product as a boutique. Is to start pushing out product that's not ready in scattered amounts all over the place without any real control. And that's the number one way to kill your brand because customers, look, if you like for instance, Pete Johnson at Tatuaje has done a wonderful job of quality control. And they've grown an entity. And you've got diehard Tatuaje guys out there that are doing they are live and breathe S&S Club Tat guys, And that has been earned over time. Okay. Yeah. So Pete and the guys at My Father and all that, for instance, have done a wonderful job. But with a brand new company that you may not have necessarily heard of, no matter how long it's been around, I mean, people don't realize this company, Cubanacan, has been in existence for almost 9 years. But because we aren't as well known, until you have that reputation for quality, you have to micromanage everything and make sure that it works. And then, you know what, when you feel like you've arrived, that's when you start and work doubly as hard. You have to, because you put a production run out there that's not up to snuff, and it's really, really hard to climb over that.
Well, speaking of which, how was Hiroshi involved in this? Because, I mean, it seems like obviously Omar was the guy blending. I'm just curious if he was involved in the curing process of the leaf. I know the wrapper leaf is 2000 Ecuadorian Habano, right? Correct on that. And I'm assuming that it was cured with whatever secret family traditions they have between both of them. Same with whatever tobacco is in this thing. I mean, I'm assuming that there was something involved. So how involved was he in the process? Was he more of just tasting them in Cuba and saying what he liked and didn't like, or was he flying over to Nicaragua to be active in the process?
No, that's a good question. It starts with Alejandro Rabani, you know, of Vegas Rabani, who taught Hiroshi pretty much everything he knew. He knows. And what Hiroshi wanted, Hiroshi's part in the job, you know, in the project was very, very important, because Hiroshi, first of all, had the vision. He wanted to release a Rabina family cigar in Nicaragua.
Let me stop you real quick. Did he approach you, or did you guys approach him?
It was a mutual conversation, as far as I know. Now, once again, this is before I was on board.
No, I didn't think about that question. It just popped in my head as you were talking.
It's a fair question. But I do know that Hiroshi had interest in creating a cigar that could be sold in the United States, you know, out of Nicaragua, playing a part. And honestly, not even that, but honestly, just wanted to pay tribute to his grandfather. And for those of you that know the Vegas Rabina brand, I mean, the Vegas Rabina, most Cuban cigars, very smooth, mild-ish, very flavorful. Vegas Rabina was the caged lion that the minute you let it out wanted to eat your face off. And that, I mean, I remember, God, back when I was in later years in college, I remember smoking a Vegas Rabina and it sat me on my butt for about 6 hours. I mean, I turned green. It was terrible. Just because I was learning how to smoke. But the level of strength, it was very different from a lot of Cuban cigars. And so Hiroshi had that vision. Hiroshi had that goal working with Omar, who he knew and he trusted and he liked. And Hiroshi said that he wanted to be able to produce in Nicaragua something that his grandfather would have put his stamp on. And so everything about the smoking experience of this cigar is attributed to Omar's mastery of blending and running the factory down in Nicaragua, and Hiroshi's meticulous attention to detail when it comes to capturing the essence that was Vegas Rabina. And between the two of them, it was kind of a Voltron of cigars, you know? I mean, then you just get together and kick ass. Hiroshi played a very close part. He smoked a lot of leaf. He had to get to know Nicaraguan tobacco.
You
know, because to be quite honest with you, he's not in Nicaragua. So he had to get to know a lot of Nicaraguan leaf. He smoked a lot of it. He smoked a lot of blends. And, you know, he did a lot of tweaking work with Omar. And between the two of them, that was really, really special what got put together, I think.
Yeah, that was on my list of questions, was how involved was he with the evolution of the process. And I guess that comes down to, you know, was he more of, you know, in this day and age, is some of these boutique guys, it's, you know, they sit down with a blender and they go into, say, Casa Fernandez, and their master blender hands them cigars and they decide which one they want eventually, you know, and go from there. So that, and given him being in Cuba and Omar being in Nicaragua, that's why I was curious about that relationship. If it was, you know, Omar sending him stuff and him giving approval, or them actually being involved, both being tobacco gurus, and how that kind of played out, because I think that would be what would make me more curious. That's what I would be curious about. You know,
it really shows in the blend too, because, you know, as you said, Catfish, there's a lot of guys out there, and it's not even just boutique, that have a blender who's in charge of the factory, who blends the cigars, and then they just kind of they pick their sample, they pick their blends, and they say, this is the one I want to use. And then they go out there and they're a brand owner and they promote it, blah, blah, blah. You know, but with this cigar, you have an individual that, you know, yes, he's growing tobacco in Cuba, but he understands tobacco. I mean, he grows it, he understands it from that perspective and even onwards. But, you know, that's where his skill set is. And then you have Omar, who's in charge of a major factory in Cuba, now in charge of a factory in Nicaragua, who understands Nicaraguan factory and tobacco, but also understands how to blend properly and how to make a great cigar. And you put those two together, and as you said, Nate, and you've created a masterpiece. And that's what really makes the cigar special and separate it from a lot of other
stuff. You know, ultimately, the question that it's asked was, how do you create a tribute to a Cuban legend with Nicaraguan know-how and product?
Yeah.
It takes both. You know, you're putting together, look, I'm a blues guy, all right? You're putting together a blues band. And everybody's playing their part, and one day these guys playing out in the Delta look up, and next thing you know, it's a really great music.
Yeah, and you know, I guess that really, and that to me would be the big, what was interesting to me, and this is random, but when I happened to get some Robena farm rolls from the island,
yeah,
and on Thanksgiving Day was when I smoked the second of the samples, and I didn't take many notes on it because I had already taken detailed notes, and I just wanted to see, kind of reinforce my thoughts on the blend. And the guy that I was smoking was a good friend of mine. He actually works in Nashville, and he's working there right now, and he flew into town, and he's got a house here, and we're sitting out smoking, and the day before we had smoked these Robena farm rolls. So then that day I brought along the Sublime, and I just handed it to him, and I said, "Hey, tell me what this smells like, or what it feels like to you." And he grabs the cigar and he looks at it, and he starts feeling it. And he's like, "It smells like those Robenas. Is this another one?" And I was like, "No." And I told him what it was. And he's like, "Wow, that's weird." And what was really trippy was the feel of the wrapper specifically, and that's why I was like, I was tripping on it. I was like, okay, obviously this isn't, you know, the same leaf by any means, and the leaves weren't obviously cured the same, but it's like, it just kind of, I don't know, it's like, okay, what kind of secret bullshit are they doing down there? What are they pulling? They're pulling on my ass.
Well, I'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. The bullshit is this, it's very traditional and very, very slow. It's a slow brew approach, man.
How long have you guys been curing this tobacco? You
know? It's been this. Let me put it to you this way: the project. Well, I don't know the exact answer to that. But the project has been in the works for several years, and it's taken a long time to make all this line up and get it to work in terms of blends and consolidation, getting everything worked out specifically with the blends and the tobacco. The fermentation process that we use is all about time and temperature and water. There's absolutely no human manipulation of the natural process of fermentation. Not in Omar's house. That just doesn't work that way. So it's very, very, very traditional. And you'd see that in the tooth of the wrapper, which this is what I really like. When you let tobacco do its thing and when you're willing to wait and take your time, the oils in these cigars, the oils in a good leaf, will really, really make a good tooth, and you can see it on that Habano 2000 on the HR. It's really beautiful wrapper.
But yeah, the wrappers are absolutely gorgeous. They're just stunning. It's simple and classic, but at the same time, it's just so elegant and new because it's just traditional, and it makes it great.
What's old is new again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So was there a lot of issues? I would imagine there would be issues at getting permission for him to travel to the U.S., getting grocery permission to come to the U.S., but initially when this all started, was there issues getting him back and forth to Nicaragua?
I know there was a lot of work involved, and it took a lot of time. I don't know much more than that, and I don't ask. you know, but it was a long process, and there was a lot of stuff to do and a lot of hurdles to jump.
Yeah, you know, I was curious about that side of it. If Omar had to travel to Cuba a lot with them, and if Cuba knew he was going there, you know, for that reason to create this cigar to go out of Nicaragua with the Robena name on it, given the, you know, how much fame the Robena name has for Cuba and the history behind it. And then eventually, obviously, he had to, you know, get permission. He got his visa for, I think, 4 or 5 years is what he told him and Lawrence told me at the show during our interview. to travel to the U.S. and do his thing. Have you been to any of the shows so far?
I haven't yet. The one I'm really, really looking forward to. Of course, I'm going to be in Miami in February. But the one I'm really, really looking forward to is with my boy Jeff Moutte at the Riverside Cigars in Indiana, right across from Louisville. We're going to be doing a great event up there with him later on in the spring, and I cannot wait. The response, you know, the thing about Hiroshi is such a personable guy. He's one of those guys, when you meet him, you don't understand, you know, or the average Joe would not understand that this guy is Jedi. And when you're hanging out with him, he's like a Jedi you can have a cheeseburger with. Because he's just so cool. And happy to talk, and so thankful, he wants to get to know the people that want to get to know what he's trying to do. You see, a great cigar, in my mind, is not just a cigar that's blended well. There are a lot of really good cigars out there that are blended well, constructed well, they smoke great, they taste great. But a great cigar, a really great cigar, in my mind, is one that accomplishes something bigger than the smoking of the cigar. And in that respect, it's the story behind the cigar. It's, in this case, in HR's case, it's a legacy of Cuban tradition, joining forces with the little cigar company that could, and doing something really spectacular. And then paying homage to somebody that changed the industry.
Yeah.
Changed the cigar industry, period.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, but a really great cigar has that story. It has that ambiance behind it. And when you talk to the person that actually put their heart and their soul into that cigar, and they want to share that with you, and they're excited about it, that's why Hiroshi's excited about it. This is one of his life goals, is to pay homage to the guy that gave him that passion and that knowledge and that know-how and made him what he is.
Well, knowing that he took over for his grandfather, which if some people don't know, I believe it was either Hiroshi's dad or one of Don Alejandro's sons has a skin issue, so he couldn't be out in the farms, and that's why Hiroshi kind of took over. And his dad, I believe, runs one of the hotels.
Yeah, Hiroshi's dad couldn't do it. He runs a La Casa de la Bamba.
Yeah. So that being said, who's running the? What is he doing about his day-to-day duties? I mean, he's obviously a farmer.
Yeah.
You know, and coming from a long line of farmers, you can't just leave the farm.
Yeah.
So what's going on down there? Does he have a next in line that he's training, or does he have family members that are holding down the door while he's running around?
That I don't know, but I do know that he's in regular communication down there, and he's got his people that he trusts. Mm-hmm. I come from 8 or 9 generations of farmers, and I get what you're talking about.
That's why.
Yeah, my grandfather's a cotton farmer, and they still run it. He's 86 years old with a broken neck and 2 replaced hips, and he's still, anytime he goes, he's calling back to the house.
Farmers are crazy like that, and they don't sleep.
They don't ever die. They just get new equipment. But, he's in constant communication with everything going on back there and making sure.
Interesting. What's the do you guys foresee? Okay, well here I'm gonna ask you the tough question, real quick. Everybody's pissed off about the price. Why is it so expensive?
Well, first of all right. I want to meet people that are pissed off. It's all about.
I'm gonna ask it because people want to know, because that's the one complaint I get from anybody. Oh, that's too damn expensive. Blah 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 blah. And I mean, I have my answers to them, but I want to hear yours.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Why does NASA not buy computers from Walmart?
They probably do these days. Sure.
Well, they may have. That may have contributed to the problem, though. No, in all seriousness, every cigar out there is a sum of its parts. And if you want to accomplish certain things with
a cigar, then you have to ask, what tobaccos does it take to do what I want to do with this cigar? And in this case, when these tobaccos were laid out and Hiroshi had the tobaccos that he wanted to use, and Omar said, this is how we do this, and this is how it worked, then this is what it laid out, and this is what it cost. And yeah. And it's quite simple. I mean, we are, it's not like, first of all, a $18, $20 cigar is a unicorn these days. There are cigars out there that are much more expensive. Now, and frankly, you know, they've earned it. You know, there are a number of companies that make really, really good pricey cigars, and a lot of times people don't even ask them, you know, twice about it because...
Davidoff could put out a $17 Petit Corona and people buy that shit all day. And mm-hmm. they've been doing it for decades and nobody cares.
Yeah.
And they're amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
See, you earned it. You know, and that's because people have that relationship. They know about that brand. I think, honestly, you know, people ask about why the price. It's not because this cigar isn't good enough. It's more because they look at the brand and they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And so there's the reason, I think. But then here's the deal. Once again, we sold over 60% of what we made in our first production run 6 months ago at the trade show.
What about now?
Yeah, we give.
How the show's going now?
It's still moving. Yeah,
that's what I figured. I mean, I was curious what the response has been since you guys have been doing shows. I've worked a lot of shop shows myself.
I know of one store in my territory that received their shipment of HR, and before the boxes got out of the box and was tagged and labeled, they had to reorder the next day. And once again, that's not happening in every store. Let's be realistic.
Of course.
But at the same time, when the customer that wants that cigar, not necessarily HR, but that profile, when they smoke that cigar, 99 times out of 100, they smoke the cigar and do exactly what you guys are doing right now and said, wow.
Yeah.
And then there's never another question about price. You know, ultimately, Cubanacan, we've been making for several years really great cigars that use certain portions of the tobacco that you smoke in the HR. You know, it's certainly, you know, it's like mixing chili. You know, sometimes you put your good bourbon in, sometimes, you know, you get it. But at the same time, Cubanacan is making great cigars that start retail price point under $5. So, you know, it's not, we're not a pricey cigar company, but this one was certainly worth it.
No, and a lot of people don't understand how much money it costs to store tobacco for years and not do anything with it as well.
That's it.
And I think that really comes into play that, you know, that's why Padrones cost so much, because they take care of this tobacco for years and they sit on it for years before they put it into a cigar.
Tobacco that is not smoked increases in price.
Yeah, and no, and I read a good article on Rocky earlier this year about his Nicaragua facility, and he brought that up specifically. He said people don't, you know, he's like, I don't foresee myself making great cigars out of this factory for another 3 or 4 years because we have to sit on this tobacco for so long, and he's like, and it costs so much money to store it. I mean, you look at what Drew Estate just did, you know, before they sold, they doubled their size or whatever they did. They made just another huge place because they have to store all of this crap before they, you know, and turn it into gold before they go and roll it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people grasp that as much. And when you look at Davidoff has the capital to store their tobaccos forever and used 10-year aged tobaccos and roll a Nicaraguan cigar and charge $17 for a little teeny tiny one, and people are balls out crazy over it, and it's in all of the cigar of the list years and whatnot, and then HR comes out and people are, fuck that, man, $17, blah, 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 you know, fucking da da da. And I understand, I get it. I mean, I'm a poor boy, I smoke cheap shit, I won't lie.
But
so
you know,
I understand.
There's a story that comes with the HR, and that's what's really important. And, you know, in some extent, it even falls on the retailer. You know, if you have a customer who comes up and says, man, what are these HRs, and they see the price tag, you know, if I'm a retailer, I could talk to them about 15 minutes, give them the story of the cigar and talking about it. I mean, the name itself is huge in the tobacco world, in the cigar industry. I mean, I don't care if you smoke Cubans or non-Cubans, you know the name Rovaina. And when you start talking about the cigar, the name, who's involved, the process, you, everything that goes into it, it begins to build up to it. And you can say, okay, I can see that. And then once you smoke it, you can say, wow, okay, I get it. It makes perfect sense. Cigar Coop, they were smoking these in Union. And there was one guy who, Coop was telling me this, he said, I don't spend that much on a cigar, blah, blah, blah. And they said, Coop told me that they're all like, buy it, smoke it. If you don't think it's worth it, we'll pay you, we'll give you your money back. I'll give you the money. They're all like, we'll give you our money back ourselves. He smoked it, and he was like, wow, this is the real deal. And that's the case. And, it's one of those things. Is it a little bit pricier? Yeah, but as you said, Nate, for this market right now, really not that pricey compared with some other stuff out there, which, as you said, is at the price point or higher, which is ridiculous. Davidoff's releasing a $500 cigar, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
But, we do live in a world where, we do live in a world where people are paying $500 for a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle bourbon.
Yeah.
But Catfish's point is absolutely correct. I can get you a great deal on a bottle of one-year-old Pappy. Let's just give me a minute, and I'll take the Pine Sol label off and put a Pappy label on it and send it to you. it takes time to make something like that. And yeah. And do I have any? Did we have any expectations that anybody would dance out there and all of a sudden turn their everyday cigar into a $22 Hiroshi Rabana Sublime? No. But this cigar, at this price point, Hiroshi and Omar, which is most importantly, they believe that it accomplished what the goal was on this cigar, which is, remember, that's my point, was what is this cigar meant to do? And it did it. And I'm on a budget too. It's one of those deals where I buy cigars. My retailers know when I go into a store, I buy cigars. And price is an issue. Price is an issue for me too. But when it gets down to it, the Padron name, they make wonderful cigars. They make wonderful cigars.
Yeah.
I'm one of the world's. I had a dog named Zeno. Okay. I'm a huge Davidoff fan. I love Zeno's entire story, everything about it. Guys like Avo, they're legends. And so is the Rabina family, although it's lesser known to the U.S. because of political issues. And so that's where we are. These guys, I think they nailed it. And when I smoked the first one, it was before I ever worked with this company, and I would have paid twice as much when I found out how much it was. Because I think it's that good. And the big thing is the proof is always in the pudding. The proof is in how many retailers are bringing this on and how many customers are really enjoying it. You can't argue with that.
Well, let me ask you one last question, because I totally get the price. When I look at a Padron 85th, it's $20 and it's this big. So that's when the people got pissed off at the price. And honestly, the Sublime, I want to say, lasted like 2.5, close to 3 hours.
Yeah, it's a 6.5 by 50.
It was ridiculous for the money. I could smoke two $12 cigars for that amount of time or one really amazing one. Mm-hmm. So I get it. That being said, do you foresee Hiroshi doing anything, putting his name on anything else within your brand below that? In a lower level line, in some of the, is it one and done? Are we just busting a nut and then leaving, or are we going deep?
Well, every cigar is a limited edition if it doesn't sell, right?
Of course.
I don't know. This is so early on in this process that we're going to see what happens.
I'm going to ask.
It's a fair question, very fair question. I'm not trying to dodge it. I'm telling you all that I know and from my experience. I've been in this industry, and I started in retail, and then I was a broker. I've been on many, many sides of this industry, and I can tell you always that at this phase in this cigar's life, we want to see customer feedback, customer response. And then whatever Hiroshi decides to do is whatever he decides to do. So I don't really know the full answer to that, but I do know that this is exciting. This has been fun.
Well, given how long you had to age the tobacco and the cost of the tobacco, are you guys prepared for the next 3 or 4 years? Where do you see the longevity of this blend? I mean, you know, because a lot of times it happens where, you know, somebody makes a great blend and then a year or two later it's gone, mm-hmm. couldn't make it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's really a big deal because for shops and smokers, if they can't get it after year two, they get pissed and they move on to the next guy.
Well, that's why we want to, once again, goes back to an earlier discussion, that's why we're very committed to managing our production in light of numbers of retailers who carry the cigar. Uh-huh. And that will give it as long a shelf life as humanly possible. You know, every cigar, eventually, by the time I'm dead, all the brands that we know now will be gone. But it's one of those deals where, you know, we'll see. But the management of retailers, that's part of what we do. And the management of production and our capability to execute, that's very, very important for us. We talked about that earlier. So that's, I think that's a big part that plays in it. And that's why we may look at that situation down the road where we say we're not going to add any more because we want to service those that are giving us demand and that got on board with us early on.
Yeah, I mean, if that leaf was, that Habano 2000 leaf was rare and took forever to cure, then are you guys curing for the future now, or are you just waiting to see, do you know?
We're putting stuff away all the time. Oh, yeah. And you can, you know, for you guys that have spent time, for, especially in Central America, you know that you can make a lot of cigars out of a small amount of land. Because tobacco is a very high-yield plant. So, but yeah, we're always putting stuff aside. You never know when you're going to be going through the factory and stumble across that next, like, holy hell, this is awesome, Pilon.
So is Omar growing? I didn't ask that question, but do you guys grow your own tobacco as well?
Yes, we grow a large portion of the tobacco we use in our cigars.
Okay. So did you guys grow the tobacco that was used in this? Or was it Habano, Ecuador? I'm assuming you guys broke that out.
Yes. I'm always a hedge my bets guy because I don't want to say definitively because, once again, new guy here. But I can tell you that I do know the vast majority of the tobaccos that were used in that cigar were our tobacco.
Good tobacco.
If not the totality of it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's, you know, and touching back on George Padron's, you know, George Padron has always explained, you know, why their cigars are so expensive. He says, listen, it's because when you get a box of Padrones, you can open them up, smoke them in bed. You don't need to worry about it. You can smoke. And that's the case with these. And that's, it's just one of those, the ready to be smoked. And, you know, is it going to be an everyday, you know, two cigars a day smoke? Probably not. But Christmas is coming up, and you got a lot of special. There's always.
Well, it's funny that you said, because I was talking to a fellow collector about custom rolls, Cuban custom rolls, and pricing, and how they when you know the fresh rolled Cubans from these custom rollers all over the island, you know, you get them and you can smoke them for about a month, and then you got to wait good 8 months to a year before you smoke them, and then they really don't kind of wake up until about 2 or 3 years down the line.
Yeah.
And once they get there, that's when they go from being a $5 or $6 cigar in a hotel in Havana to, you know, a year old, they're a $12 cigar. Once they hit the States, year old, maybe $13-$14, 2 years old, $15-$16, and then somebody has a bundle of Hamlets from 2008 and they're $600. You know, and people are paying 20 plus a cigar because you have this prime tobacco that's been aged for 4 or 5 years. So,
a great example of this on a lower price scale. I have a dear friend of mine that's a retailer in North Carolina, and he's got at his store, he's got some really random old stuff. Okay,
yeah.
Now, I didn't know this until I visited the store. But I walked into the store, now rewind back to around 2001 or 2, and I would, back in my former life when I was a minister, I would go down to Panama City, and that's where I would go on vacation. And I know where middle-aged people go to have regrets they can't remember. And it's awesome, right? It's like Sons of Anarchy meets a hairstylist. But there was a cigar shop down there that had Oliva back before the cloth bands.
Yeah.
Before, Oliva had a cigar called the Gran Maduro.
And the Oliva Gran Maduro was a box press. I always bought the Churchill, but they made like a Robusto, a Bellicoso, a 7x50, all sharply box pressed, black as night, paper band, Oliva Gran Maduro. I fell in love with that cigar. Now, that was, like I said, 12 to 14 years ago. I went into this retailer in North Carolina, and by the way, back then, if I remember right, $2.50 for a Churchill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I know. And then I go into this retailer's place, and he's got boxes of Oliva Gran Maduros that were just sitting up there because very few people have ever heard of them. Now, I bought a box of them at $8 a stick. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just natural cost of business market increases. I would have paid $20 a stick for these things because they're that good, and they aged out that well. So your point is I think, exhibited very well. I think it's highlighted very well in just the case of that one cigar. And we all know those great cigars.
If you go find, there's a couple shops in Southern California that have been around for a long time. And you can go in there and you'll find, randomly, you'll see like a box of Master Blend 1s or Master Blend 2s or Camacho Liberties from like 2003 or something. And what are the price tags on them? $20-$25 a stick. And every time I see them, I go, and I buy a couple. And, you know, I can't buy more than a couple, but I buy a couple. Or he'll have like original Pepin blended cigars from like 2005. You know, that Pepin rolled, you know. And by all means, some of those Pepin cigars need 8 years before they're smokable. They're so damn strong. But the point is once they get there, it's worth the money because you can't compare. There's no comparison. And I think, you know, I've smoked some cigars recently, some Nicaraguan cigars recently that reminded me of the Hiroshi and the flavors that it offered. But I can look at it and go, yeah, but I need to sit this down for 2 or 3 years before it's going to come close, which is that's time. Time is money.
The cigar just decided
at the end of the day,
aging for you. You know, so go ahead and take care of that. You just buy the cigars. That's the one guarantee I'll make. Yeah. You open the box, you smoke the cigar, it's ready to be smoked.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's a fabulous cigar.
It's fantastic now, and it's going to remain fantastic. And this is
I don't foresee it taking any dives in the next few years.
Yeah, this is a terrific blend. It's balanced, and it's when they rolled this and they blended it, they knew what they had. It's just.
And I'd imagine, you know, having a palate that is born and bred on Cuban cigars and the flavors of Cuban tobaccos. I mean, you know, Seth and I are obviously Cuban whores. The Nicaraguan tobacco is so different to achieve quality finish. I mean, it doesn't taste like a Cuban cigar at all. But the really good Nicaraguan cigars, to me, finish like Cuban cigars, in that there's no palate burn, there's no settling in the back of my mouth or anything like that. And so that's what people sometimes ask me, well, how can you like to smoke Nicaraguan cigars? Some of the Cuban guys that I hang out with, and I'm like, well, I don't. I think they suck. I hate their fucking tobacco. Like, but you have like a bunch of Nicaraguan cigars you like. I'm like, yeah, because they're blended right. They're blended with good tobacco and they finish well. You know, and so there are, it's same with Dominican tobacco. I mean, how many people, you know, swear by Opus that's been aged 5, 6, 7, 8 years? And that shit costs like $20-$30 a stick if you can find it aged that long.
Right.
Same thing. Like, don't bullshit me. You've taken 5 years to put age on an Opus to make it smokable. ATF's coming. They're coming for me right now. I know. But that's what cracks me up about it, because there really are, there's great tobacco everywhere you go. And it's very unique. Dominican tobacco is very unique. The best Dominican tobacco is very unique. The best Nicaraguan tobacco is very unique. But one thing that all of them have in common when they're really good and they're expensive is how they finish. And that's, to me, was what I liked the most about it, was the way that it finished. And I sat there and smoked that Sublime for like close to 3 hours, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, this is great. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's good. Oh, fuck. This is goddamn, it's really good. I'm like, shit, it's been like 3 hours. You know, that to me was what sold me on it, because I've had those experiences with Padron, you know, family reserve stuff and you know, the expensive Davidoffs and Zenos that I love dearly, you know.
Well, I will tell you, I am. The one thing that I've always looked at cigars as, you know, we always in college and whatnot, we had jokes about cigars. We would call them fellowship enhancers. We had a lot of different ways to look at it. And the thing that I've always, when I sell a cigar, when I introduce a customer to a cigar, the one thing that I've always thought about, I've always remembered, is that when that customer buys that cigar, that customer is investing an hour of his life or 2 hours of his life into that cigar. It's my job and it's my company's job to see that we're damn sure giving them a good 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yep. Because they're giving us 2 hours of their life. In return, we're giving them a good experience for that 2 hours. That's our job. And whatever price point and all that stuff comes out, that's all water under the bridge. But the goal is to see to it that if they're smoking, like this Maduro, I'm smoking a Cubanacan Maduro Rothschild right now. Our smoke, for me, one of the best damn $6.50 Maduro Robustos out there. And certainly fulfilled. And the same deal with just about anything else. I'm very proud to say that, you know, in my career, the cigars that I've brought to people, that I've shown to people, I've always put my integrity in there with the cigars, because I believe that if I introduce someone to the wrong cigar, that says something about me. So I've always tried very hard to see to it that I help that customer invest their time wisely, because they could be grieving, you know, they could be grieving for a lost family member. They could be celebrating the birth of a child. And I want to see to it that at the end of that time, when they're done with that cigar, they don't look at their hand and say, well, God, that was a waste of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the number one thing.
There's back in 2003, I bought a box. Well, 2003, 2004, I bought some sticks. The cigar was called Symphony.
Oh,
it's called Symphony. It's now the Gurkha Symphony, which is all a whole CI thing. But at the time, this was a limited edition 13-count box Keihan Sōtia Symphony. This was before CI turned into this huge Gurkha Symphony. And I bought a couple of these because I was graduating high school. And I was like, wow, these are really good sticks. I went back when I went to college, bought a box of them. I'm like, wow, these are great. Didn't really do anything about them for a little while. Found a box of them. You know, and then I called retailers, said, hey, you know, you have the Symphony? And they're like, yeah, you're talking about that, you know, that Gurkha with just that one silver band? I said, yeah. I said, that one. Limited edition, you know, 13 in a box. They're like, yeah. They're like, yeah, we still got a couple boxes. I was like, give them. And I probably have two boxes, maybe a box and a half left.
That's cool.
It's a phenomenal cigar, you know, and it's one of those things. There's a lot of guys who bash Gherkin. I'll throw Logan Lawler on the bus here. I sent it to him. I took the band off of it. I sent that Connecticut to him a lot. And he's like, that was friggin' incredible. What was that? I said, what do you think it was? And he was guessing. I made him guess for about 2 days until he started killing me. I said, you just smoked a Keihan Sōtia Symphony from 2004. I said, which is now a Gurkha. I said, what are you going to say? He's like, that's an incredible cigar. And it's just, it doesn't matter. And I mean, I still have them, and I'll send them to people just to prove them wrong. It's just, it's an incredible stick. And when you find something like that, you really need a treasure.
Yeah, and I think a bigger message there, it's really cool to me, is, look, I know how we all can get, all right? There are enough forums out there. I've been in cigar social media for a long, long time. I remember when you had to dial up AOL to get in on that action. So I think the lesson is, even though we all have our beliefs and our preferences and companies that we love and companies that we may not necessarily love and all of that, don't get jaded. Don't be that guy. Just enjoy the damn cigar. And you know, because we can have all those things in our head that we believe to be true, and then all of a sudden somebody drops an unbanded cigar from a company that we say we don't like, and all of a sudden it's the best thing in the world. You know what? Good for Logan. If he likes it, stick to it. Oh, it was that? Never mind. No, it's a great cigar. And I think, you know, we can get ourselves lost up sometimes in the politics and in, you know, all this other stuff that we may not like. But I think at the end of the day, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and they're meant to be enjoyed.
Yep. Yep, and sometimes men have periods and they flaunt it on the internet. And they get all butthurt about cigars, and at the end of the day, it's just a damn cigar, dude.
Exactly.
Blows my mind.
You want to talk about first world problems?
Oh my God, Drew Estate sold! Oh!
First world problem, exactly, yeah.
Morons.
So,
morons.
Catfish, I know you have a gig. I know your band's got a gig.
Yeah, I got to head out here in a second. So what is it, 6? Yeah, 6:30. We got to bounce.
I really appreciate your time. You know, I'd like to tell all the viewers, reach out to Cubanacon, get some other lines, get some HR, smoke them. You'll be impressed. I know Catfish and I
yeah, I mean,
they're great, but this is the real deal.
I was very, very, very impressed with it. I mean, and I, like I said, I'm with some of the other people too. The price is it's high enough that it's hard for me to spend more money on it, and you know, because I'm a broke ass grad student. But you know, if our rating system on Cigar Federation wasn't based on how much I would buy, I would have probably rated it in the mid to high 90s, because it was that good. You know, based on how good it was, then. You know, I'm still, yes, I'm going to buy 10 of these things at least, because that's, I mean, I buy 10 boxes of Padrones, 80 fists, 40 fists, you know, once a year I'll buy a 10 count box of them and spend the money, because I know when I want to sit down and smoke it, it's going to be a great experience, and I don't have to worry about it, you know, I don't have to worry about a bad burn or tossing it. I mean, I've got a graveyard of cigars over here, of samples from boutique companies that are $8-9, and I flip toss them out because they suck balls. You know, and I light one up, and it sucks, and I just throw it away, and I go grab something I want, you know? And it's nothing against that company, and I'll never say talk shit about any companies, yeah. But that's an $8 to $9 boutique, and it sucks balls in comparison. Yeah, I'm picky, so, you know.
Well, I appreciate that, and, you know, that's the important thing. We've got bigger, you know, I've been in social media. I've appreciated social media. I understand it for a long, I've been there for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you guys... play a, you know, I believe that social media, I'm one of these guys that believes that social media, bloggers, reviewers, writers, those people that invest their time, look, you guys don't have to do this, but those of you that invest your time into helping the industry be a smarter industry are doing a service, and you're, yeah, absolutely, and you're educating consumers, and you're playing a part. I'm sorry, Jennifer Lawrence just came up on my Twitter feed. Hey, but
that's more important. That's more important, man.
It's my girl. But the social media side of things is very important to us, and it's one of those deals where I appreciate the objectivity. I really, really do. So you guys are doing you guys do a great job, and I appreciate you having me on. I will say to everybody out there one more time, in case people have jumped on later on in the broadcast. I want to say thank you once again. Social media being what it is, you learn a lot. The cigar industry is very unique in that on the manufacturer side and the consumer side, there's a relationship there that I believe doesn't exist in a lot of other industries.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart on behalf of the McIntyre family for the love and concern and appreciation for the fall that we've gone through, because not only did I switch career paths, but then the next month, you know, my wife is diagnosed with cancer, and so we've had an adventurous fall, and the love and appreciation and support that we've experienced from random people around the country does not go unappreciated or unforgotten. So thank you from our family,
awesome.
You guys, and thank you to those of you that have trusted in Cubanacon to this point, because you're not supporting some big structure. You're feeding families of people that are busting butts every day to get out there and do something they believe in. So thank you very much for all the support.
Right on, brother. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come on and chat with us about it.
Absolutely, my
pleasure. Very, very.
Thank you.
Right on. Thank you. Well, that's episode Viente, episode 20. What embargo.
20!
With Nate McIntyre talking about Cubanacon and the HR. We'll be back sometime next year unless Catfish and I get arrested by the ATF or somebody.
Go out and drink yourselves pretty, because you need it. Trust me.
Yeah!
Man, we are somebody. Woo! Well, thank you all for tuning in. Nate, thank you so much for your time. Catfish, have a good gig, man. Good night.
Word.
Good night and God bless. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all.